This is Lars. Thanks again for checking out my podcast. Enjoy your day and the show, and let's make America great again.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. We've got a lot to talk about on the Radio Northwest Network today. It is Conspiracy Theory Thursday. But before I go any further and tell you some of the things that are at the top of my mind, we just got word literally minutes ago. You all remember Rick Adelman, NBA coach, and you may well have known his son, 44-year-old RJ Adelman. This is his son, was walking through downtown Houston. This apparently happened a few days ago, but he was hit by an 80-year-old woman. And according to a police report, he was not using a crosswalk at the time of the accident. He was taken to the hospital in serious condition, and he was pronounced dead about 4 hours later. That news has just broken, but spare a thought and a prayer for the Adelman family with connections back here to the Pacific Northwest and Portland in particular. Just a thought and a prayer for their family, because that's a terrible piece of news. But welcome to the program. Glad to have you with me. There is so much to talk about today. And one of the things I wanted to talk about first is our Twitter poll. We put out a fresh question every day. Sometimes it's on the light side, sometimes it's on the heavy side. I find this one of the heaviest topics, and I'll tell you why. I'll frame the question this way. Should Americans provide organ transplants for illegal aliens? And you might think, well, we don't do that, do we? Well, not up till now. But yesterday, Oregon Health and Science University, a formerly state institution that was taxpayer-owned and operated. Now it only includes some of the benefits of being a former state agency, like pensions and such. OHSU, that has complained over from time to time about being short of resources for this and short of resources for that, has changed its policy with regard to transplants. In this case, it is a liver transplant. And if you know anybody who's waiting for a liver transplant, this is a particularly tough situation to be in. If you need kidneys, for example, you can always go on dialysis. If you need a heart transplant, you can go on ventricular assist devices that can keep you alive till a transplant is available. If you need a liver transplant and you don't have one, you die. And that's the truth. There was an incident, I don't know, 20 years ago, a bunch of people went out mushroom hunting. They got some mushrooms. They cooked them up. They happened to pick some dangerous ones, some deadly ones, and some of them were hit by liver failure. If your liver fails, you die. There is no liver assist device. There is no dialysis for that. And so liver transplants are particularly problematic, but also transplants in general. One of the numbers I don't hear repeated often enough is this, but I know it well because I used to do documentaries about transplant, about all kinds of different transplants. It was just a subject that I found fascinating, and I watched a whole bunch of those operations. 4,000 people die every single year for lack of a transplant organ, and many, many more live kind of miserable lives because until they get the transplant, especially if you're on kidney dialysis, it's like having a bad, bad case of the flu 24/7, 365. So 4,000 Americans die every year for lack of the organ. The medical technology is there. The hospital's there. The doctors are there. But you don't have the organ. You got to have the organ. We haven't yet figured out how to make those other than, you know, artificial hearts, and those are of limited applicability. But here's the way it was being reported hours after learning that an undocumented woman who had lived in Portland for 30 years, in other words, she came into our country just after the last amnesty was granted, which is an important lesson for the issue that's being debated on Capitol Hill right now. And that is, what do we do with a whole bunch of illegal aliens? Well, every time you grant an amnesty, you're going to get a flood of new illegal aliens. This woman came here just after the amnesty created by the American Congress and by President Reagan. It was that long ago. She was denied a liver transplant because of her immigration status. She's illegally in the country. Her name is Sylvia Lasama Santos, 46, stay-at-home mom of four kids. And that's very sympathetic, but she got a letter from OHSU that said, you have to have lawful presence in the country. Well, the ACLU Tuesday night sent out a press release, and they effectively threatened OHSU. We're going to go after you, because we're going to defend the civil rights of somebody who's illegally in the country. So now we're finding out that OHSU is going to change its approach to this. And I want to know what you think about this, because I'll put the question to you this way. If a member of your family needs a transplant organ, and you're a hardworking American family, you pay your taxes, you obey the law, you do the things that are the right things to do, What do you think about the fact that the organ that might have gone to your mother, your father, your sister, your brother, your son, or your daughter is now going to go to somebody who is breaking the law just by being here? Yeah. Well, OHSU has now apologized for what they call their archaic policy and reversed course after denying an undocumented woman liver transplant. That's the way the Daily Dead Fish rapper added it up. I've been working since we heard about this yesterday to try to get a hold of some of those agencies and organizations that advocate for the interests of people who are waiting for transplants. And I'd like to know what they think about the fact that we're going to do this. Because we are going to tell people who are illegally in the country, breaking the law by being here, we're going to give you something. And by giving it to you, this is like a game of musical chairs. When the music stops and you don't have a liver, you're dead. That's what happens. When the music stops and you don't have a liver, if you're an American citizen and they gave your liver away to an illegal alien, then you are dead. And I want to know how many of you think that is a great change of policy to say we're going to take something that's already tremendously scarce. I gave you the scarcity. 4,000 people die in America every year because they don't have a transplant organ. I want to ask you. Are you okay with giving that organ to somebody who's breaking the law, not in the country legally, instead of to your mom or dad or another member of your family? Are you going to be okay with that and say, that's all right, mom or dad is just going to have to die because the liver she would have received is instead going to go to an illegal alien? To your phone calls and emails at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk at LarsLarson.com.
That makes a lot of sense. A lot of nonsense.
Right. You're bloody well right. You know you got a right to say.
This is the Northwest Nonsense, presented by the Ryan Group, where they guarantee to sell your house in 29 days or less, or they'll buy it. 29andgone.com.
How much longer do we have to sit for this nonsense?
No left-leaning, dead fish rapper bias. No mega TV network liberal agenda. Just the cold hard facts from Lars.
We need to trust the police. Trust has suffered over the last several years since Ferguson, largely driven by racial supremacy groups like Black Lives Matter. But sometimes police officers hurt their own reputation and trust. Case in point, a Portland police sergeant who now admits that he lied to citizens about taking videos. Look, everyone with a smartphone, which these days is just about everyone, has a sophisticated camera in his pocket. When you witness the police doing their jobs, that's usually interesting enough to video. I think those videos protect the police and they protect the public. They usually confirm the officer did his job right and did it. Yet this sergeant decided to lie about the law and tell citizens they could not legally shoot videos. When a citizen goes out in public, he forfeits his privacy if someone wants to video. An officer who decides to work in a very public profession also accepts that people will watch and sometimes they'll take pictures. The only officers who have to worry about those cameras are those who violate the rules.
Insane.
Are you completely insane?
Ridiculous.
They get more and more ridiculous.
Flat out dumb.
You're even dumber than I thought.
Who deserves today's Lars Grill of the Day?
Maybe they're just really, really stupid.
Find out right now. Brought to you by Arm Yourself Gun Store in Hillsboro. Proudly veteran owned and open 7 days a week. ArmYourselfStore.com.
Today's Daily Grill, I'm going to award to OHSU for shortchanging citizens by offering organ transplants for illegal aliens. Today's best email, but you can always send more to talk at LarsLarson.com. Ed writes in from Centerville, Washington. Lars, a coup by any other names is still an attempt to overthrow the legitimate elected government of the United States. One of the definitions of the term treason is an act meant to overthrow a legitimate government. There's no doubt in my mind that the actions of the Department of Justice, the Department of State, and of the FBI were taken to drive our elected president out of office. It is time to call a spade and a coup a coup. I enjoy your show. Signed, Ed in Centerville, Washington. I'll come back to your phone calls and emails in just a moment. Glad to have you with me live on the Radio Northwest Network. Please vote in that Twitter poll. You can find it two places, at LarsLarson.com and at Lars Larson Show on Twitter. And you're listening to the Radio Northwest Network. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Well, more than a few people saw and heard what I had to say, saying, should we give an illegal alien a transplant, taking that rare organ and awarding it to somebody who's breaking the law, who's a criminal? And I had a few people say, well, if it's for a humanitarian need, then it's okay. We should do it. Well, I want you to answer the question, are you willing to let that happen if it's very, very personal to you? If your mom needed that liver, would you be willing to say, Mom, we're going to have to say goodbye. because that liver has to go to an illegal alien instead of to you. Are you ready to say that? Let's go to Naysayer Francis in Tacoma. Hey, Francis, thanks for listening on Talk Radio 570 KVI. Where do you and I disagree?
Because you're labeling somebody that's fighting for life, and I think it's kind of disrespectful as you as a human being to do that.
Which label are you talking about?
Because I think that you think that lady shouldn't have a liver transplant simply because you label her as an illegal alien.
I'm calling her an illegal. I didn't label her. She became an illegal alien by choice, didn't she?
It doesn't matter. That really, at some point in life, you have to become a human being and look aside at some things. Because you really don't understand the transplant list at all anyway.
I do. I absolutely do. And I'm willing to bet I know it better than you. What do you think I've got wrong about the transplant list?
Well, for one thing, when they ask you a question to get on that transplant list, and you're on that transplant list, and you're seeking an organ, they'll ask you several different options to get that organ. And one of them is, would you accept it from a person that's in prison? We know that a lot of the population of the prison are illegal aliens, but they do. But here's the sad thing.
You haven't said anything to contradict anything I've said already. The transplant lists are made up of very sick people. You have to be very ill and very close to the end to get high up on the list. So I'm asking you, are you legally in this country?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Are you willing to tell one of your family members who is an American citizen and obeys the law, you're going to have to die so that we can save the life of somebody who is criminally in the United States?
That question that you're asking in that situation is really hypothetical.
No, it's not hypothetical at all. It's real. I just told you 4,000 Americans die every year for lack of
a...
Hold on, Francis. 4,000 Americans... 4,000 Americans die every year for lack of a transplant organ. So if somebody gets a liver, somebody else has to be denied a liver. That's how it works.
Lars, here's the situation that I was in. I went in as a backup person. The person that was supposed to get transplanted before me, there was something wrong, and they couldn't get transplanted.
Because of a medical reason, right? When you said something was wrong, that would have been a medical reason that they couldn't get it. Might have been a financial reason, might have been insurance. But for that reason, that's okay to say, I'm sorry, you're medically disqualified. For example, I've talked to transplant surgeons.
My mom or white relative could go in there and in that same situation. Somebody has to make the choice for life.
Well, I'm asking you, should the choice
want to fight for life just make
Francis, you're repeating yourself though. Are you ready to tell a family member of yours you don't get the organ because we're going to give it to somebody who is committing a crime by being here?
It depends on how sick they are, and really
it depends on how sick they are.
It's really up to God to make that choice, not you or anybody else.
Well, actually, somebody didn't have to die to give a kidney or certain other organs, but you're right. For the major organs, hearts,
livers. My mom died of a kidney transplant because she needed a kidney transplant. She didn't get it. I know all this stuff, and right now I'm...
So you had a transplant, and your mom had a transplant, too? Boy, you're a rare family because that doesn't usually happen.
My mom couldn't get a transplant back in the 80s. I got my transplant in 2010.
So all I'm asking you, Francis, you still haven't answered my question. If your mom was still around and she needed that liver, and the doctors came to her and said, look, we're not going to give you the liver. And you said, well, why not? And the doctors say, because we're going to give it to somebody who is a criminal in our country who has no right to be here.
I would have to leave that decision up to my mother, not me, not you.
Well, then let me ask you how you would make it. If they had come to you, you got a transplant. How long ago?
8 years ago.
Okay, so 8 years ago, if the doctors had come to you and said...
I would have given somebody the opportunity at life for me, you know, to pass away.
Okay, very good. I'm glad to hear, and that's the way we disagree. That's okay. But I'm just curious how many people would be willing to say, you're right, give it to the criminal instead of giving it to my son or my daughter or my brother or my sister. That one doesn't make sense to me at all, but I appreciate the phone call. Let's go to Tom in Rainier. Hey, Tom, welcome to the Lars Larson Show.
Hey, Lars. Thanks for having me. I lost my wife 2 years ago because she could not get that liver transplant.
I'm sorry.
And, thank you. And I got to tell your last caller that if he is not aware that when you're a criminal in this country, you lose a lot of rights. be it legal or illegal, but particularly being illegal, they have zero rights, in my opinion, none whatsoever. And I'm sick and tired of the appeasement and this whole attitude that society is trying to shut down everyone's throat. I'm done with it. I can't take it no more.
It bothers me, too. And I want you to think about this, too. If you have a whole world with 7 billion people in it, and you only have 300 million in America, and somebody in another country says, hey, America gives transplants free of charge to people, even if they come into the country illegally. Let's take our family member to America. We'll sneak them across the border, and we'll be able to get a transplant there at no cost to us. The American taxpayers will pay for it, and we'll get the organ. And if you had enough of that going on, you could see even more Americans die for lack of a transplant, couldn't you?
Yes, sir. And you know something, Lars? I'd be willing to bet you dollars and donuts that you go to Mexico or any other nation, for that matter, and try to get on their transplant list illegally. Go bust into somebody else's country illegally and see if you're going to get on their transplant list. And if you do, what's your priority?
You know what's going to happen in that, because Mexico won't even let foreign nationals work without the proper paperwork. They enforce that law strictly in that country. We do not enforce that law strictly in our country.
Yeah, the people have lost their sense of reasoning. Thank you, Lars.
I'm sorry to hear about your wife, by the way, Tom. That's tragic. And, you know, the fact is, the reason I mentioned those documentaries I did on transplant, I had the chance to talk to people who were waiting for a transplant. I talked to families who did not get the transplant that they needed for their family member. I also saw some successful transplants, and I think they're a wonderful thing, and it's a wonderful gift to give up an organ so they can be put into another human being. But the fact is that we have a country that is willing to give those things up to somebody who isn't even legally here. You're almost inviting people to say, well, to hell with the border. I have a family member who needs a heart or a kidney or a liver or corneas or any other, even stem cell transplants. And then we give it all away. And what do you say to the American citizens who've worked hard and obeyed the law and played by the rules? You tell them you're a sucker. You're paying for it. You got the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Well, it spurred quite a conversation and a flood of emails to me, but it's our Twitter poll question today. Should Americans provide organ transplants for illegal aliens? Oregon Health and Science University has apologized and terminated the policy that caused the denial of an illegal alien, a 46-year-old woman who says that she needed a liver transplant, and apparently now she's going to be on the list. Because OHSU says that their old policy of denying them just because you were breaking the law by being here, they say that was archaic. I'd love to talk to somebody from OHSU, but we've been previously told, we used to call OHSU all the time for comment, and they would just give us a no comment. And they said, I said to them, would you just save us some time? Just tell us you're never going to comment on anything we ask you about. And they said, that's the case. So we don't get comments from OHSU, but believe me, while they are no longer a state institution as they once were, they still get a lot of benefits by being a former state institution, things like pension and protection from lawsuits under tort claims liability that is ordinarily only enjoyed by state institutions. I'll go to your calls now. Let me go to Brad in Oak Harbor. Hey, Brad, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. Hey, Brad. All right, Brad, you gave up. Perry in Forest Grove, what's on your mind, sir?
Hey, I was wondering if you heard the report that I did on this station a couple hours ago that they're looking at changing the Oregon Constitution to make health care a right.
Yes.
And I'm wondering just how bad Oregon's going to get with the flood of illegal aliens all from across the country, let alone other countries,
or
and
other
the
states.
Homeless, all to come here. Yeah, other states, yeah. You know, just and the homeless to come here just to get health care.
Yeah, and what does it mean when you say it's a right? Because I saw the same report. I actually brought it up at the tail end of last week. But there are people in the Oregon legislature, Democrats, who say we should add this as a right. Well, does that mean the right to get it? Everybody in this state has the right to go get health care. But putting it into the Constitution, I suspect, is aimed at somehow making it a right to have it paid for as well. I mean, I have a Second Amendment right, but that doesn't mean the state or federal government is going to buy me a gun. I have a First Amendment right, but it doesn't mean that the state or federal government is going to provide me with a newspaper or a radio show. So You know, the idea of putting it in as a right, I think, is crazy. Everybody can go to their doctor, to the hospital in this country, and get care. And I would include even illegal aliens or people who are visiting this country legitimately. If you get hurt, you can go to an American hospital, and they will take care of you. But we should not put it in the Constitution and make it a right. No way, no how. Let's go to Judy. Judy, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. Thanks for calling in. What's on your mind today?
Thank you. It's kind of been addressed, the gentleman before that had talked about OHSU kind of retracting their policy about it being an illegal issue, and now that it's an insurance issue. They said they don't treat anybody that doesn't have insurance. That was on the news the other night. And I was just wondering what your thought was about that. Do you think that is in as a result of this, all the bad publicity they're getting, that they've changed their policies?
Probably, because they might have received bad publicity in the past, and I know that we've talked about this issue before. In fact, there was a young lady years ago named Brandy Stroder who needed a three-organ transplant, and they said, you can't have it because you don't have the money, or your mom has raised some of the money, and Brandy Stroder's mom raised a lot of the money herself, but she fell short financially. And then an inmate in the Oregon State Pen needed a stem cell transplant, which costs about $250,000, and they gave it to him, on the taxpayers. So in this case, all they say is that this woman does have insurance through her husband. Now, we don't know if that's through work, through Medicaid, through Medicare. We don't know, but she was referred for a liver transplant last year, and it didn't go through because she didn't have insurance at the time. Now, apparently, she has insurance in some form through her husband. But that's going to be the other question, is at what point do we say we're not only going to give it, but if you're an illegal alien in this country, in many cases, you're going to qualify for Medicaid. And then at that point, what are they going to do? Say, no, we're not going to give it to you. So Americans will be in the position of both providing the organ, which is in extraordinarily short supply, and providing the financial behind it as well, while at the same time turning to American citizens and saying, I'm sorry, you don't qualify because we had to give your organ to somebody else. And I guess that's the problem. That's the part I find the most problematic, Judy.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. I mean, I agree with that first gentleman about it being a humanitarian thing, but it would kill me myself to see one of my loved ones die just because their organ was given to somebody else, or the supply of organs was decreased by it being given to someone else that isn't here legally.
And I don't think I don't think we hold other countries at fault. I mean, if Canada says our local organs are given for the people in our country, I wouldn't fault them for that. I'd say, well, you should do it that way. And some countries are very good at encouraging people to donate their organs when they pass, and if they're medically eligible. And some countries are not as good. Actually, America has not done a terrific job of encouraging people to give up their organs when they pass, or to do what's called autologous, but there's another term for it, where you could give up a kidney for a family member or a friend. And we hear plenty of stories like that where some generous person says, I'm going to give my kidney, which you can give one of your kidneys, to a stranger or to a family member to try to make their life better. I applaud them when they do that. But if America has a finite supply of transplant organs, I don't think they should be going to people who don't have enough respect for our country to actually obey the laws of our country. Thanks for the call. I very much appreciate it. Let's go to Brad in Oak Harbor. Brad, we missed you before. Welcome to the program. Thanks for listening on KVI.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I lost you on deception pass. So just a couple thoughts for you. One is possibly a pool could be started for people that are here illegally.
A pool?
And their organs are harvested for illegals.
Well, so in other words, we'd say that if an illegal alien gives up his organ, it's only available to other illegal aliens. But if Americans give up their organs, we give them to anyone?
Well, here's the second thought on that. The other thought is when illegal aliens do die, and if their organs are harvested, I don't know if that happens or not, law-abiding Americans get those organs?
Well, except that, Brad, illegal aliens are a small percentage of our whole population, so we'd be giving them a tremendous gift in exchange for almost nothing, or very little. You see how that works? That doesn't sound like an equitable. That's like the trade deals before Donald Trump became president, where the United States always got the short end of the stick. Why would you want to? And I guess what I'd ask you is, why would you want to give this tremendous gift of American medical technology and transplant organs from American law-abiding citizens to somebody who doesn't even have the class to come into the country legally?
I'm not advocating that at all.
But you are trying to come up with a system for providing illegals with transplants, right?
Yeah, well, you know.
That's where you started.
Obviously, they're going to be here. No, they're obviously
not going to. I mean, if you've noticed, we have gotten a lot tougher on border enforcement. We're that close to getting a wall. We're going to start enforcing the law, and Trump has been enforcing the law vigorously where Obama did not. So when you say, well, we just have to accept that they're going to be here, no, we don't. Anymore. Kim is on the line from Prineville. Hey, Kim, thanks for listening on KBND. What's on your mind today?
Well, let's see. A few years back, my heart got sick, and now it only works 35%.
Ouch.
And with Obama's law, a few years back when he was in office, he made it so 55 and older, if you're not worth it, you're not worth it. You talked about that one time.
But hold on. They didn't adopt a 55-year-old standard, but I mean, There were in Obamacare things that Sarah Palin once described as death panels, and I believe they were right. They were actually formal,
right,
you know, decisions about making judgments. What were you waiting for? What organ were you waiting for?
Well, when I went in to see the heart surgeon, he said, first he said he was sorry that he couldn't help me because of that. And
because of insurance or because of the lack of an organ?
No, because of the law, the death sentence.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, Kim, I'd like to get more information before I pass judgment on that one. Back in just a moment. I'm glad to get your phone calls and emails at 866-HEY-LARS. And by the way, we've got tickets to give away in this hour, coming up in the next segment, to the 1517 to Paris, the great new Clint Eastwood movie. We're going to do the premiere tomorrow night. I'll be there to welcome you, and we'll be glad to have you, but we only have a small number of tickets, so in the next segment, we're going to give away a pair of tickets to the Cinetopia premiere of the 1517 to Paris, and you're listening to the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Glad to be with you and glad to take your phone calls. Boy, does this one steal your heart away. I won't put the man's name on this, but he said, heads up, my wife and I, a year ago, were going to have a child together. We were rushed to OHSU for tests. And we found he had teratology of Fallot. We knew that he would need surgery right after birth. We were perfectly fine with that. Then they said they had to do an embryo fluid test to see if my wife have a needle go into her stomach. Was heartbreaking. They came back with tests and said that, well, the little boy had almost complete deletion of chromosome 8. His head was supposed to be at 22 millimeters. It was 8, massively underdeveloped. They said guaranteed severe retardation. His chances of survival at birth would be a miracle at best. And even if he survived, he wouldn't leave on his own. To add to the pain, they also said there was no way he would survive open-heart surgery. Lars, many of the physicians and docs suggested a highly recommended medical abortion. We spent a couple of weeks after weighing the options. We decided to abort. We didn't want any of this. Then we get hit with $15,000 in doctor's bills. We filed for some help and waivers. Even the insurance barely covered. Out of pocket was thousands. What is so hard to stomach about this fact is the fact that Oregon will let illegal immigrants or illegal aliens get free abortions. Are you really serious about that? Some of this brings up some of the toughest issues that people have to talk about. I'm going to take one call off this topic for a moment. I'm intrigued. Dan is on the line. Hey, Dan, welcome to the Lars Larson Show and welcome to the Radio Northwest Network. What's on your mind, sir?
Good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I actually have one statement and one question.
Okay.
Regarding what you've been talking about, the organ transplant, I don't see a lot more people donating, saying, oh, people who are criminals, I'll donate more. But I do see a lot of people who are like, oh, you're donating my organs to criminals, I'm not going to.
Exactly. So it has a very good likelihood of discouraging people from donating at all, saying, I'm just not going to do it because I don't like the fact that the system has decided to turn political and not recognize the law-breaking activities that are involved in these illegal aliens. So I'm with you. I think this will probably discourage people from donating organs.
Okay, on to my quick question.
Yeah.
You spoke before about Robert Finicum, and I knew most of what you talked about, but there was a few minor details.
You mean LaVoy Finicum, the man who was shot to death when he tried to pull a gun on the Oregon State Police?
Yes, sir. Sorry
okay.
about that.
That's Lavoie Finnegan.
Lavoie. Okay. And I hear a lot about also Michael Strickland. And according to the state, he's Satan, and according to him, he's been railroaded, and I don't know where.
Okay, now these are two different cases. One involved a man who was part of the Bundy takeover of the Malheur National Wildlife Refuge in eastern Oregon. And the second man, Mike Strickland, is a local videographer and journalist who is confronted by a crowd of people holding poles or signs, and they were advancing on him, and he felt his life was threatened. Not quite sure what the comparison is, but go ahead.
If you know, my question is not the comparison. It's obviously you do much better research than I do, so I was trying to get your input on the Michael Strickland case.
Strickland defended his life. He thought he was about to be attacked by a group that was much larger than him, carrying poles, and they were behaving in a threatening manner, and I think he had a right to feel fear for his life. He pulled a gun out. The gun was out of his holster. We clocked it because you can look at the video. It was out of his holster for all of 6 seconds, and then it was back in. And he was a law-abiding citizen, and he was doing what you're allowed to do under the law, protect your own life. So that's my take on that. Lavoie Finnegan, on the other hand, was a man who engaged in a criminal activity, the takeover of the wildlife refuge. He then ran from the police, ran one police roadblock. He was stopped first, then he ran from that one. He tried to run second police roadblock and almost ran over an FBI agent, jumped out of his truck, was confronted by police who were armed, and he was told to put his hands in the air, and he did initially, and then his right hand reached for the inside of his left jacket pocket, where they later found a 9mm handgun, and the police shot because he made a threatening gesture, and they're entitled to do that. So I see that's the one comparison I can see. The police saw that the man was about to reach for a gun, and that was a threatening gesture. Michael Strickland was confronted by a threatening group, and he decided to protect his own life. He ended up being convicted as a felon, and the Oregon State Police ended up shooting Lavoie Finnegan, who had vowed never to be taken alive. So,
let me apologize. I didn't mean to do a comparison between the two events. I meant to do a comparison in terms of your quality of research. And so I wanted to know why the Department of Justice didn't get involved with Michael Strickland. And
I think they did, because there were a couple of FBI agents who admitted later that they had fired some shots inappropriately. They didn't hit anything. They hit the top of the truck. And the DOJ did look into that because the FBI did an internal investigation, at least, and it would have been looked over because the FBI is part of the DOJ. So there was an investigation there, and there was an investigation of Strickland. But I think Strickland's prosecution was purely political. The local Multnomah County district attorney in a very liberal city, a city full of snowflakes, decided to charge a man who had done nothing more than point a gun to protect his own safety, and acted, I think, within the law, and he was prosecuted.
So where do you go from there?
Well, Strickland is continuing to appeal his case, and Lavoie Finnegan is, dead. So
understood.
No appeals for that.
No, I was more interested in terms of the Michael Strickland. I was just mentioning the first one, just mentioned how good your research is, and
I do fairly good research, but I look at what the law enforcement agencies say, and I look what common sense tells me. If the police point a gun at you, don't reach for your pocket. You got the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Sometimes I get ahead of myself, and we need to give away a pair of tickets for our special premiere tomorrow night at Cinetopia in Vancouver at the Vancouver Mall, a 6:30 showing of Clint Eastwood's brand new movie called The 1517 to Paris. If you didn't hear the story a couple of years ago, it was three young Americans who were just simply out on a holiday. I mean, they're out having fun, and they were on a train from Amsterdam to Paris, and a jihadi got on that train with an AK-47, and he began to kill people, and they managed to stop him barehanded, and their heroic story is told by Clint Eastwood using the three young heroes to play the roles that they played in real life. So the fifth caller right now at 503-733-4101 gets a pair of tickets for tomorrow night showing, and please don't call and win these tickets if you're not going to be there, because we only had 10 tickets to give away. So I'd like everybody who gets those tickets to use them. Fifth caller at 503-733-4101. That's 503-733-4101. I want to mention something, and then I'll go back to your phone calls. There is a new program that's been announced at a state university, PSU. They are offering free tuition. Well, it's not free. It's just paid for by somebody else to transfer students. And when I heard about this story, I thought, you mean all you have to have is a few credits at some other college and you can come to Portland State University and go to school for more than 3 years tuition free? I'm not trying to sell you on the idea. I think it's a terrible idea. But to be eligible, you have to be a resident of the state of Oregon. You have to be admitted to PSU as a transfer student and have 30 or more transferable college credits. Now, 30 credits is not even a year's worth of study. 45 is a typical first year in college, 15 credits per term for three terms. So you could be barely into your freshman year. And then you transfer to PSU, you have to have a 2.5 GPA, so that's a C+, and be eligible to receive a Pell Grant, as determined by the FAFSA, Free Application for Federal Student Aid, and be enrolled 12 to 15 credits. At this point, illegal aliens are not eligible for this, according to PSU, and I include that just because of some of our other topics today. So I looked at this, and I thought, hold on, isn't this the very school, like all the other colleges that are funded by the taxpayers? Isn't PSU one of the very schools that was complaining just a few months ago that it was critically tens of millions of dollars short of meeting its budget? And so I went back and I looked it up. PSU last September said that it was looking at a 9% increase in tuition and $9 million in cuts to faculty and staff. So it's a school that doesn't have enough money to meet its bills right now, is jacking up the tuition for its existing students by 9% and taking $9 million in cuts. And then they turn around a few months later and say, hey, to 900 students, transfer students, we're going to give it away for free. Well, free in this case, I think, means that who's going to pay for it? The existing students. And I tried to put myself in the head of a sophomore or a junior going to PSU and any other college that launches this kind of cockamamie scheme here in the Northwest. You've been sitting there sweating out a degree for several years. You're now in your sophomore, maybe even your junior year in college. And you hear that while you've been paying full rate and while you got whacked with a 9% increase in tuition last fall, and they've cut down the number of staff, which means cutting down the number of classes that are available, the school that you're going to where you've been paying full rate is now going to give it away for free. Well, I put a call into the Kevin Reynolds, who's the head of finance at the school. I don't know whether he'll call me back or not, but he's welcome to. We'd be glad to have him on the program to explain, how do you tell all the other students at your school, you folks are all paying full rate, but we're going to give it away for free. And in this case, if you transfer in without even a full year of college, 30 credits in, that means you have more than 3 years worth of work to do. So free tuition for 3 years at the expense of all the other students who are paying full rate. I would even take a naysayer call on that as to whether or not you think that that is an equitable deal for all those other students. Let's go to Dell in Woodland, who called in to talk about the fact that Oregon Health and Science University is now offering to do a transplant, a liver transplant for an illegal alien. Dell, what do you say?
Hi, Lars. Let me just say first that I'm always impressed on the depth of your knowledge on a wide variety of subjects and your articulation on the air.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome. I have a couple of points. The first is that on these lists of potential recipients transplants, that they're matched by all these different things, so, you know, blood type, all sorts of biological metrics and such.
Yep.
And there's what they don't have on this priority list, and this is whether you're a U.S. citizen or not. It would be a simple change just to have a box that says U.S. citizen.
Oh, Dell, hold up a second.
Priority of
Dell,
anyone?
Dell, hold up a second.
Yes.
That's exactly the line that has been on OHSU's forms up till now that they are taking off. They literally had that as a requirement. It said you must have legal status in the country, and they now are down on their knees prostrate. Saying, oh, we're so sorry that we ever asked for that, because the letter said she must have lawful presence here. And the American Civil Liberties Union, you know, the American Crooks and Lawyers Union, apparently sent out a press release that was jamming up OHSU, saying they shouldn't have been asking her about that. Well, as a matter of fact, I think they should have been asking her. And so now they say, ACLU says it was cruel and inhumane to insist that somebody be legally in the United States to get a transplant. So they had exactly that line on their form, and they are now taking it off and apologizing for it.
I think my point really goes towards I don't care if an organ goes to anyone else who isn't a U.S. citizen, just as long as it's prioritized correctly. That if no U.S.
Wow.
citizen can use that
wow.
organ,
wow.
then that organ is available, because why waste it?
Hold on. Dell, I think you put a qualifier in there that you said something unusual. If you're saying, if after they've tried to match it to every other citizen or legal resident of the United States, then they can give it to the illegals, that's not the way that the system works. If you're on the transplant
no,
list...
No, I understand. I'm just saying that's my point. That is my
and
point.
You,
that
so, well,
if that's the case,
I guess then you would tell me that if you had a family member, and let's take heart and liver. You can't live without a heart. You can't live without a liver. So you have a member of your family who's on the transplant waiting list for a liver. And there's also an illegal alien on the transplant list waiting for a liver who has no right to even be in the country. You'd be okay if the liver went to the illegal instead of, say, your mother or your wife or your daughter.
No, that's not at all what I am saying. You're missing my point. My point is my mother and my wife or whoever it is, my loved one, is a U.S. citizen.
I know.
Their priority always trumps anyone who's not.
But it can't.
So
not
on
hold
list,
on. Hold on. UNOS, which is the United Network for Organ Sharing, will not run it that way. They won't say if you've tried to match all the other citizens and you can't match it, then you can let the organ go to the transplant to an illegal alien. They would say if you're on the list, you can get the organ. Period. So you're suggesting
a
system.
I'm just saying there should be a prioritization to that list.
Well, how about this? How about this prioritization? If you're not legally in the country, you can't get it. What's wrong with that standard?
Well, the only thing is that if no one who is a U.S. citizen can use that organ because perhaps it's a weird blood type or whatever, if they can't use it, I throw it away.
Hold on. Dell, I've done a lot on transplants, and I've never found a situation where they weren't able to match it up with somebody on the list. Sometimes ischemic time can be an issue, but, you know, that's the amount of time the organ can be out of the donor's body before it gets into the recipient's body and still work. For hearts, it's like 5 hours.
Can I mention one
sure.
thing? You are mentioning implementation. I'm just talking about policy.
Yeah, and I'm talking about policy too, because I'm asking you, how do you, because if you adopted a policy where we said any leftover organs go to the illegal aliens, that's not what UNOS says right now. It says if you're on the list, you get it, and if you're not on the list, you don't. Can you imagine there are 7 billion people on this planet? And some of them, you know, all spread out all over. We're only a third of a billion people in this country. So, Dell, if you're sick, if your mom was sick in India and her liver was failing, and you said, hey, they're giving it away to people who are not legally in the country. So you you get your mom flown in on a tourist visa to the United States, and you park her in a hospital because she's ill. And she said, oh, I'm too sick to go home. And she waits till she gets the liver she needs. And she gets it instead of an American. Are you okay with that?
Like I said before, as a matter of policy...
Okay, now, if you're just going to repeat yourself, I'm going to move on to another call, Dell, with respect.
Okay, so let me make what I think is
make
a more
make important a new, make point. Make a new point then, please.
Then that is increasing the supply of organs. Now,
how does it increase the supply if you fly in people from every corner of the globe
Wait a minute. I'm going to tell you why. I'm going to tell you how, okay? So in the U.S., the amount of people, the number of people who actually say, yes, you can take my organs, is vanishingly small.
It's pretty small. We manage to do thousands of transplants a year, but about 4,000 people a year die while they're on the transplant waiting list and they because there's no
That's
organ
right.
available.
That's
so
right.
how does that
and
increase
in,
the supply?
And in many European countries, they ask the question on your driver's license in the opposite fashion. They don't ask you.
Oh, they opt you in. You know what, Dell? I've dealt with this.
Yeah.
Belgium has this, where you are opted in unless you deliberately opt out. And there are even countries where they make it very difficult to get. So would you force Americans to be on the transplant list?
No.
Because that's what that is.
It's not forcing. It's not forcing. You simply make it very clear on the driver's license thing. Do you wish your organs not to be given? It's not a difficult thing to opt out. You make it very easy and simple. When you do that, you have a
a number of people participating in
If you think that just simply changing the, because right now when you go in to get a driver's license dealt, the people who fill this stuff out will say, do you want to be an organ donor? They ask you. So you're telling me that you would get a fairly large increase in the number of people who'd say yes if instead of asking, do you want to be on the list, you say instead, do you want to be off the list? I don't think you're going to see much of a change.
No, you will see it.
Can I tell you where I think you're going to see the bigger change, Dell?
What's that?
A lot of people listening to this show are going to say, oh, they're giving transplants to illegal aliens who are breaking our laws. I see people in the next weeks or months saying, I'm off this list. I'm no longer donating because I don't want to be part of a system that simply says we're going to take organs from American citizens who don't break the law and give them to people who do break the law. Can you see people reacting to that?
Absolutely, they could react to that.
That's what I'm saying. Back in just a moment. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It is a pleasure to be with you. Lots of things on the agenda today. Transplants and, of course, our Twitter poll question today. Should Americans provide organ transplants for illegal aliens? Oregon Health and Science University changing its policy announced yesterday. They used to ask, are you legally in the United States, as one of the questions. And now they say, oh, we're so sorry. We didn't want to ask that question at all. It was rude of us to ask that question. Let's go to Lydia, who's calling in from Snohomish, listening on Talk Radio 570. Hey, Lydia, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Hi. I just wanted to let you and your listeners know that the human liver is capable of regenerating itself, meaning that you can do live donor.
You can take part. Oftentimes, you'll hear about a mom who has a child and the child needs a liver. Sometimes it's the other way around, and they'll take part of mom's liver, but they have to leave most of it in mom for mom to live, and then they'll put the rest of it in junior.
Yes. Well, what I'm saying is, it is now done adult to adult.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, I think a lot of your listeners are thinking that a liver transplant is like a heart transplant, which requires a deceased donor.
Most of them call what they call a cadaver donor. Most of them are. But how does that relate to this question of whether we give organs to illegal aliens?
Okay. The legality and ethics are definitely an issue. But, okay, let's say an illegal alien needs a liver transplant.
Yeah.
What if the illegal alien
has a friend who's willing to give up part of their liver? Then it's a question of who should be paying for it. Should they get access to our medical system? Are they on Medicaid, which means American taxpayers are paying for it? I think there's a whole new set of issues in that kind of case. But I appreciate you bringing that to our attention, and thank you for the call. Let's go to Bob. Hey, Bob, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Hello. Hey, one thing about this organ transplant situation for a lot of people is there's typically a notice. You have a chronic disease. There's an issue, and you'd mentioned Brandy back in the day.
Brandy Schroeder. Yeah,
Brandy Schroeder. Okay, this is very personal to me. I had a daughter born in the early 90s with cystic fibrosis, and I'm hearing about Brandy's struggle trying to get her organ transplant, and the powers that be here at the state determining how they're going to spend our resources and who gets to live, who gets to die. And I'm working construction, making $12 an hour, thinking, my God, my kid is going to be put in front of these bean counters someday to find out whether she gets to live or die.
Yep.
I cannot go move forward like that.
I can completely understand that, and that seems like a sensible point of view on it. I appreciate the call. Let's go to Chuck. Hey, Chuck, welcome to the Lars Larson Show on the Radio Northwest Network.
Thank you, sir. How are you doing today?
I'm doing quite well today. A lot of thick issues, a lot of thorny issues out today.
Yes, sir. My question about the illegal alien that's getting the transplant is, how long has she been in the country?
Ha-ha! That's part of the best part of this. She has been here 30 years illegally in the United States. And if I want to remind you of the math, That means she came here in 1988, 2 years after the amnesty passed by the Congress and signed by President Reagan, which he described as one of the biggest mistakes of his entire political career. So, in other words, she came here at about the age of 16, just 2 years after the amnesty, which tells you what happens after amnesties. There are people in other countries who say, hey, America's giving it away for free. Let's go get some.
Yes, and also, too, I was in, after I heard that about the transplant to the illegal alien, I'm like, you know what? I'm no longer going to be a donor. So today on my lunch, I went and changed my yes to a no on my driver's license.
And I expect, Chuck, there are going to be an awful lot of people who hear this story, and they're going to say if they're changing the rules, and they're no longer going to respect the fact that people in this country have rights as citizens, and people who are criminally in this country should have fewer rights, that they don't get put on par with the rest of us, and they certainly don't become super citizens and put us in second place. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you live on the Radio Northwest Network, and always glad to get your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@LarsLarson.com. Vote in our Twitter poll question on Twitter at Lars Larson Show. And it's great to be able to talk to our go-to man when it comes to law enforcement issues, and that's Bernie Giusto, retired Multnomah County Sheriff. Bernie, how are you today?
Good, Lars. Thanks.
Hey, I read this story, and it kind of troubled me because there's a 58-year-old man who said that the police racially profiled him when they pulled over a bus. He was running to catch a TriMet bus, and they questioned him about a crime. And, of course, he felt that they had done this because he's black. Well, the police explained to him, they said, look, there was a crime committed in the area. It was a robbery, a woman who was robbed of her wallet a few blocks away at a lottery cafe. And he matched the description. And so when they saw him running and then jumping on a bus, they thought, well, we should talk to this guy. And he says this is all just racial profiling. I wanted to get your take on that because I don't tend to agree with the guy, but I wanted to see what you had to say.
Well, I think you're in the right place. Really, in those circumstances, Lars, the police are obligated to take some kind of responsibility and action when they have a description that reasonably meets description, regardless of color. It could be nothing with color. It could be clothing. It could be vehicle. They're going to make that stop. Less important of who it is how it's done and how it's explained and how professionally it's done and how reasonably it's done. Because if that was the right person and the person walks, and the next thing we know, that person commits a robbery someplace else, regardless of color, race, creed, or anything else, the police are going to come under way more scrutiny for something like that.
Do you think that there are times where officers are, and I could see myself in the head of an officer this way saying, look, I'm doing my job. We're trying to solve this robbery. We're trying to not only find the person who, you know, took something from this woman in a circumstance that could have ended up with her hurt. And so how much, you know, does the officer sometimes think, do I have to stand here and explain why I'm doing what I'm doing or just do my job the right way?
Well, I think that the options are really very few, and part of professional law enforcement is taking the time to explain when the circumstances allow. Certainly, making felony stops with people out on the ground on their faces doesn't require anybody to explain why you're out on your face. But I would make this case that I've seen situations where overreaction by the police, meaning that they had a description, they reacted in a way that might have been reasonable up until the point they made that contact, and from that point on, the person wasn't the person, but the action leading up to what wasn't an arrest brought criticism that wasn't necessary. So, yes, we need to take time to explain because they're part of the job of law enforcement is gaining the confidence of not only that person, but the person around, people around them as officers go about their duty. Because really, in the end, what we sell is our the trust of the public. And the only way we do that is by acting reasonably given the circumstance.
Well, see, and I could see they might be able to clear it even faster because if somebody went to this, you know, lottery cafe, robs a woman of her wallet, and takes off, and he's a black man of a certain age, certain height, certain weight, all that. And they stop a man, and they say, we've got a description of a man who's supposed to have committed a robbery, we believe may have committed a robbery in this area, and you fit the description. If the guy says, well, I was in talking to my lawyer for an hour, you know, in the office just down the street from here, and if you want to go talk to my lawyer or call him on the phone, he'll tell you that I was sitting in his office for the last hour, it might actually lead to clearing the thing faster than if he doesn't know what's going on.
All right, that's a good take. The thing we got to remember is a good investigation always starts by trying to eliminate suspects, not by targeting people. So this is not a targeting situation here where we say, this is our guy, we're going to make this stick because he matches the description. Good investigators always know we eliminate suspects. That's how we come up with the right person in the end.
Let me ask you about a second issue that's come up, and I had some pretty strong feelings about this. There was a sergeant who indicated that he had lied to citizens on occasion, and apparently more than once, telling them it was illegal for them to video the police doing their jobs. Now, I told my audience earlier this week, I said, look, you can't get in the way of the officers, which means if the officers are doing a stop and you're standing right behind them, they don't know if you're a threat or something else. But as long as you're standing at, you know, some distance and you're taking videos, that's perfectly legal. And I think the officer should not have lied to the citizens. Now, I understand that sometimes you may lie to suspects, and lying to suspects in questioning has actually been upheld by the Supreme Court. So in a case like this, should officers try to deceive law-abiding citizens who are doing nothing more than taking videos and tell them that what they're doing is illegal and scare them out of something that they have a right to do?
Well, you know where I'm going to be honest with you. You know, that's not only acceptable, but I just explained in our last situation, is what we sell here is public trust, public confidence. Sometimes it's uncomfortable for police officers who find themselves being videoed, even when they're not doing anything incorrect, and believing somehow that, you know, this is their world and everybody else lives in it. But that's not the case. The case is it's a public space, and those videos are perfectly allowable. And in fact, police departments that haven't prepared their police officers for the new environment have really let their officers down and the public down. And I'm going to tell you, that's the problem with police administrations across the country on this issue, is technology has overwhelmed them. And so if I go down to DPSST today, which is the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training, where officers receive their basic training,
yeah,
I will tell you that I'll bet that on that agenda, on that training agenda, there's nothing that represents the importance of technology and enforcement on that agenda, on that training curriculum now. And if there is, it's a passing mention of it. This is where police departments let the public and their officers down. By the time the officers catch up, there's disciplinary problems. The public believes that somehow they're being deceived. And in the end, it's all about training policy and follow through and supervision. None of this should be going on a regular basis. But blame the officer for the action, but blame the department for not setting the groundwork.
Well, and tell me this, how tough is it to cover that in training, to say the public has a right to take pictures or video of what you're doing, period, and the public does not have a right to get in the way of what you're doing? You know what I'm saying? So because I've walked up, I've watched stops from a distance, but I've also gone to ride-alongs, but I've watched stops from a distance and thought, well, I'd like to see better, but I know if I step up closer, then I'm going to be, you know, another potential threat for that officer, and I don't want to do that. I don't want to get in the way of him doing what he's doing. So I'll stand at a distance and watch it. But how is it so tough to tell officers the public has a right to videotape you unless they're literally getting in your way?
Well, you just done it the way it should be done. But
so I could go down and teach that class? It'd be the Lars Larson short course in 20 seconds or less.
Just about. But back to the issue, I think, of police administrations. Police administrations have become very lazy in terms of preparing officers. And you'll remember the days when Portland police, and I'm picking on Portland here, handed out cell phones. Well, out went the cell phones, no policy, no training, and pretty soon people were in trouble with the use of the cell phones. And this is the kind of thing that is about police administration, not about police officers. So a lot of the problems in this country about what's not happening in police departments has little to do with every police officer. Individually, there's a problem once in a while with police officers, but more you look at poor administration, poor decisions, poor training, poor follow-through, poor evaluation. And those are the kind of things that undermine the public trust. It looks like it's the officer's issue. And in some cases, it is. But in many times, it's the administration's issue.
I'm talking to Bernie Giusto, who's a former Multnomah County sheriff. So tell me this. There are a couple of cases recently argued before the Supreme Court, and one of them's kind of intriguing. It involves a guy going by an officer at 140 miles an hour, which is always a bad idea, and he gets license plates and the photos of the bike going by, and he tracks it to a home, and he sees what appears to be a motorcycle under a tarp. And he walks up and takes a look under the tarp and sees the license plate and confirms it's the motorcycle. So How do you think these cases should come out, and should they come out to either broaden or narrow warrantless searches, searches where you search just by looking?
Yeah, see, the interesting part about that is two different definitions of searches when it comes to vehicles and properties. So in 1925, the Supreme Court decided the vehicles stood on their own in terms of people's right of expectation of privacy in the vehicle. And the court, of course, has ruled on that over time to kind of limit that broad language. In this case, the question is the fact that the motorcycle was under a tarp, partially exposed, but on the outskirts of the property, which is protected by the Fourth Amendment in terms of unreasonable search and seizure, is it good enough that I think it's the vehicle, and if I go over and uncover it, is that an unreasonable search and seizure other than the fact the vehicle is parked on the street and I could see it on the street, but I went onto the property to uncover part of it to make sure it was a vehicle, and the vehicle was stolen. Now, this would be a close call in this court. It will be no more than 5-4. My guess is that this court will allow officers to that latitude. But I'm going to tell you that in the past, anything that has to do with separate containers in a vehicle, we stop a vehicle, we can search it, we find a separate container, we may or may not be able to search that container on the spot.
And by the way, just so people know, a separate container might be a briefcase, it might be a handbag, it might be a plastic Tupperware. I mean, what anything else?
Anything there. And the question is, does TARP create a reasonable expectation of privacy based on the situation? It won't matter to the court whether or not the vehicle stolen. That's not going to be part of the decision. The decision is, there was a reasonable expectation of privacy guaranteed by the Fourth Amendment, and it wasn't violated.
You know, one other thing I wanted to bring up with you, because I've been pushing this idea for a long time. You know that I'm a big believer in the Second Amendment. I want law-abiding citizens to have guns. I also want people who are not law-abiding citizens not to have guns. And the L.A. City Council, with which I don't think I agree once in 10 years, they actually voted to create a program right now, a new program, that offers a $1,000 reward to anybody who provides anonymous information that leads to the recovery of an illegal firearm. And Bernie, I've always thought that if city governments were to say, and county governments and state governments were to say, look, if you know of somebody who's a felon and you know that he's carrying a gun, give us the info. If we catch him carrying a gun, which is a crime in and of itself, you can get a reward for that. That it might be a way to get a lot of guns out of the hands of felons and off the streets. And I figure a gun in the hands of a felon is the kind of gun that's most likely to get used on a citizen, a bystander, or on somebody else.
Yeah, I think that's a good take. Now, without knowing all the facts, it sounds like a reasonably good program. I'd want to know exactly how it is we come about the information of the gun being stolen or the gun being illegal in the hands of...
Well, Bernie, I would think the most garden variety would be, do you think most crooks know other crooks who they know have been to the joint?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
And some of them are competitors in their pharmaceutical enterprises. So I was thinking, if you could get one crack salesman to turn in another crack salesman for carrying a gun, yeah, I know he gets a reward, but at least you get the other crack salesman with a gun off the street, which means, I hope, a safer streets.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, for $1,000, a lot of elements turn in their mothers.
Bernie,
I've known people. Okay.
It is a pleasure to have you on. Bernie Giusto is willing to visit with us from time to time and give us his expertise as a retired Multnomah County Sheriff. We'll be back in just a moment. I'll get to your phone calls and emails. And you're listening to the Radio Northwest Network and the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It is a pleasure to be with you, and I'm glad to take your phone calls and emails. We've been talking about transplant issues after OHSU decided to tell everyone they're going to give transplants to illegal aliens, and I took exception to that. I don't think that should happen. Laura's on the line from Washougal, Washington. Laura, your brother is on the transplant waiting list for a kidney. Tell me about that, and tell me what your take is on this story.
Okay, well, I am a first caller, and my brother had a real bad stroke. We thought we were going to lose him, but he survived that, and he has kidney failure, and he does dialysis 3 times a week. And I am kind of upset about the idea that OHSU is going to give an illegal a liver, but then nobody is willing to help my brother to get a kidney so he doesn't have to do dialysis all the time.
Well, but Laura, there are people willing to help your brother. There are millions of Americans who are on the donor list. And when one of them meets an unfortunate end, their donor may become available as a what they call a cadaver donor from a dead person. Or if you had a person who was a member of your family or a close friend who might be willing to donate a kidney. I think I might have said liver, but I mean kidney, that he could get that one that way. So there are people who could or might help out your brother.
Oh, I would love a list of that so we can check it out for him.
Well, if he's on the kidney waiting list, is he?
I am not quite positive of that.
Okay, because if he's medically disqualified from getting a transplant, then that's another matter. But if he's qualified, and he gets on the kidney waiting list, the minute one becomes available that matches him, there's a whole protocol for who those organs go to. Laura, thanks a lot. I appreciate the call. Let's go to Josh in Beaverton. Hey, Josh, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Hey, how's it going?
Very well, sir. What's on your mind?
Oh, so I heard you talking earlier about the, it's okay for people to film stuff like that, film, whatever they can see with their eyes, because the eyes cannot trespass, the Congress says. So there's one thing I'd like to touch upon extra is if the police in any state or city run your license, not your license plate, but run your license without probable cause, you can sue them.
Hold on. Why can you sue if a police officer observes your license plate and runs it through the database for wants and warrants? Why would that be the subject of a lawsuit?
No, license, not license plate, your ID. They run your ID.
They run your ID without a warrant, you're saying?
Yeah, well, without probable cause.
Well, no, they don't need look, if they've pulled you over for a traffic infraction, they have a right to say license and registration. They can then run that for wants and warrants before they turn you loose. Oh. I think you're entirely off base. If you want to send me by email the court case that says they cannot run you through the system looking for wants and warrants, that's done literally hundreds of thousands of times a day. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you all over the Pacific Northwest. We're live on the Radio Northwest Network all the way from Coeur d'Alene to Bellingham, from Seattle down south to Ashland, Oregon, and all over Oregon, Washington, and Idaho. And we're glad to be with you. We're glad to take your calls. Can you imagine being told that you have to join a labor union to be able to care for a family member? If you think that's just some kind of crazy conservative conspiracy theory on Conspiracy Theory Thursday, it's not. Who's joining me on the phone now? Senator Michael Baumgartner, Republican of Spokane. So, Senator, welcome to the program. And what was it that kept the Democrats in Washington State on the Senate floor till 1 o'clock this morning?
Well, it was really kind of the worst in politics, Lars. What you saw last night was the Democrats trying to sneak into the Senate after hours with nobody was around, and then limit debate, not have any debate on the floor, shut it down, to run a pet bill of the SEIU to keep the campaign money flowing into the Democratic coffers. And it's a bill that was entirely designed at the request of SEIU to subvert what happened with the Supreme Court with the Harris versus Quinn decision to try to protect people taking care of their loved ones and not have to be forced to pay union dues. And the most point of the entire thing was we have a confidential memo from the governor where in the memo, the union boss of SEIU tells Governor Inslee what he wants. And surprise, surprise, the bill the Democrats produced on the floor at the request of the governor is to a T the request of the union boss, again, to try to keep the union money flowing in the Democratic coffers. So really the worst of politics last night here in the Senate.
Now, how did it end up with the Democrats in charge with a majority?
Well, we fought it with 50 amendments into the wee hours, and eventually on parliamentary procedures, we were able to stall them last night. By Senate rules, a bill has to be read in public three times, and so we were able to push the bill back another day or so by not giving them the ability to move it out for the third time. So we fought them on the amendments, and then so the bill has not yet passed. But given how all the roll call votes went on very simple, very simple things like increasing transparency, allowing people a choice with their force union decisions, and there were just straight party line votes from the Democrats, because I think every Democrat member on the floor, including the lieutenant governor, who was presiding over the proceedings and not allowing floor debate, have all been endorsed and received substantial campaign contributions from the SEIU. So the fix is in on the bill. This is what happens when Democrats are in control of this state. But this will probably be the most significant bill that the Democrats will pass out of the legislature this year. And again, it's just kind of the worst of politics.
Senator Baumgartner, I know where you are on this, but every time I hear about one of these moves where they pass a law that says that a whole group of people who are not working in a single workplace, working as a bargaining unit, but they're instead spread out all over, as in home health care. This one narrow issue of it that you're talking about has to do with people who are doing it for their own family members. But I don't even think that the people who are providing care for strangers should be forced to join a union by state law. I mean, I guess if they want to organize independently, that's fine. The Constitution gives them that right. But how in the world did we ever get to a point where both Oregon and Washington tell home health care workers that they have to be unionized and pay a bunch of dues, allegedly to get some kind of benefit? I'm not sure how the people who are paying the dues feel about the benefits they're getting, but it sure doesn't look like much. And by the way, at the same time, artificially raise the cost of providing home health care, which might mean that if somebody has $1,000 to hire a home health care aide for a month and you jack up the price, it might be that they go from 50 hours to 20 hours or 30 hours that they're able to afford, which is it's a detriment both to the home health care worker and to the person they're caring for as well. How can we get out of this stuff so that we no longer have people forced to do this and put the people who need home health care in a position where they can't afford to hire the kind of care they need?
Well, one great way would be to support the Freedom Foundation, who's doing a lot of good work to try to bring information to these home care workers who are being forced to pay $1,000 to each year just in union dues. They don't have to pay that money, but they're not given that choice under how things are currently being run. So Freedom Foundation is trying to educate folks about that. So that's a great organization to support. But you're right, it's wrong what's going on in the state. But the reason why the Democrats are doing it is the SEIU gets $26 million a year, the majority of which they spend, give straight to the Democrats for campaign contributions, who then get elected and then maintain the status quo of continuing to reward them. It's like a self-licking ice cream cone here. And as, de Tocqueville said, the American Republic is safe until the Congress learns it can bribe the public with the public's own money. And frankly, what's going on right now is a lot of bribery in the truest sense of folks with this money.
Senator, do you think we could ever get to the point where Washington State, where I make my home too, could become a right-to-work state where all of these people would have a free choice? Join the union or not, it's your choice. Right now, they have no choice. Do you think we can ever get to that? And can we get to it through a ballot measure without having it torpedoed by a Washington Supreme Court that also gets a lot of money from the unions?
It'll be tough, but people said it couldn't happen in the Midwest. It happened in Michigan, it happened in Wisconsin, and it's both just an essential element of personal freedom, but it also makes your economy stronger and better. It's no surprise that manufacturing growth is going faster in the South and places like Texas, where there are where there's more freedom and labor choices and less regulation, and it's why Boeing has left, other companies are leaving, Amazon is leaving. Won't be surprised to see them move to a right-to-work state potentially. So it can happen. The discussion needs to start with these mandatory union dues where people don't even have a choice, and taxpayer dollars are going straight into union coffers before the employees even get a chance to touch the money, and then it goes straight from these union bosses' coffers into the Democrats that keep them in power and continue their sweet deal going. So, it's something we have to fight for. I really appreciate the fact you talk about this issue on your show. I would encourage everybody to try to get a copy of this governor's confidential memo where he is told what to do by the SEIU union bosses and then delivers for them. Again, this is the same governor that when he appeared before the big labor rally came out to the song "Sign, Sealed, Deliver, I'm Yours" after he won. And this is the same guy that got his biggest campaign donors were these union bosses. So they made a good investment that has paid off for them, and they're trying to recoup to reward themselves with this bill, this terrible bill they tried to pass in the middle of the night.
Senator, I'll tell you, I've made this offer before. I've always said that if the Democrat Party ever invited me to one of their little get-togethers, their shindigs, I'd pay my own way to get there and give a speech. If any of these union groups would ever entertain having a contrarian voice like mine come and talk to them, I'd love to do it because... I was talking to a state official from Indiana a couple of years ago, and he said, Lars, you know that when people come here from other countries and they look at putting a plant in our state, they don't ask first about local wages, they don't ask about taxes, they ask about right to work. And literally they've run into, or when they're on trade delegations to other countries, the folks they talk to, they ask that question first. They say, is your state a right-to-work state? And if not, it's a deal killer, because they know that if it's a right-to-work state, then they're not going to be trampled by unions. And if it is a right-to-work state, they're going to have terrible things happen, which is why even a notoriously long-time union-dominated state like Michigan, as you mentioned, has decided to embrace right-to-work and let people make a choice about what they want to do. I would think people would want that choice. And when they think, I know it's tougher for the average worker, maybe a construction worker, to think, is there a company somewhere in Asia or Europe that might come and build a plant here in Washington State, but they choose Indiana instead, or they choose Michigan instead because it's a right-to-work state? That's the kind of thing that may escape their notice. And I certainly know that the fish wrappers, like the Spokane Chronicle and the Seattle Times and the Portland Oregonian, are not going to go out and run stories about how trade deals and manufacturing opportunities for states end up going away because the folks behind those decisions say, we don't want to come to a state where the union is going to tell us what to do.
Well, I think one of the things that's happened is the private sector union guys are really being sold down the river by the far left environmentals and the public sector folks. If you look at what happened with things like the port in Vancouver, other manufacturing potential sites, really Olympia is being dominated by the public sector unions and the far left environmentalists, and it's the private sector guys that are losing out. You know, at some point, hopefully the private sector trades will figure out that the far left environmentalists are not their friends and come over and talk about what's labor fair and labor regulation. But I'll tell you, they're never going to invite you to their meetings, because I have the same offer out to them, and this is what has happened repeatedly.
What?
They have their meetings. I never see an invitation, even though I've told them I want to go. At the meeting that I haven't been invited to, they tell everybody I turned down the invitation. And then about a week after their big union meeting is beheld, something will show up in my mailbox inviting me to come.
Gee, maybe they could try email, because it's relatively instantaneous.
Oh, I would love to go talk to them, because, you know, a lot of those guys are good, God-loving Americans like you and me. And if you can have a good conversation with them, you know, they'll see that we have a lot more in common than we have different. But it's really their union bosses that are the problem, because they're the ones at the top of this money pyramid, and they're the ones making out like bandits. It's not the guy working the line or the guy out there working the trades. It's really the bosses manipulating the system for themselves.
Hey, before I let you go, real quick, tell us about the candy tax. They're literally considering a candy tax in Olympia.
Well, you know, the Democrats have such an appetite for spending. They cannot look at any cause and not try to spend money on it. And the great blessing of the state legislature is that we can't print money. I mean, there's a lot of nutty, crazy stuff that goes on in Olympia, and this state is upside down in a lot of ways. But at the end of the day, you can't print money. So with all their spending desires, these guys are just pathologically built to tax and spend. And so, yeah, they got key taxes, they got tax bottle, why they got taxes on everything. But, you know, I think the people of this state are finally getting taxed enough, particularly with all these property tax increases they're seeing.
Senator Baumgartner, it's a pleasure to have you on. We're glad the way you represent Spokane, and thanks for the time today.
You do a great job, Lars. It's always a pleasure.
Thank you, sir. Back in just a moment, we'll be glad to get your phone calls and emails. A little update with our criminal illegal alien of the week. And you're listening to the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the program. Before I go to your phone calls, before I even go to your weekly report on illegal aliens, I have to mention this. This has to be the quote of the week. Portland has a fairly weak-willed mayor named Ted Wheeler that a lot of folks had big hopes for. I mean, there were folks who thought, this guy's going to be governor someday. Well, he was in Seattle speaking at the Crosscut Festival. Now, Crosscut is a fairly liberal publication in the Seattle area. But he was speaking on a panel, Mayors of Cascadia. And this was the day after the mayor had ordered, there was a sweep of an organized homeless camp, which I have no problem with whatsoever. But old Ted Wheeler was getting all kinds of criticism. He got blistered up one side and down the other for that. So here's the quote, and it has to be one of the quotes of the week. In order to do the right thing and provide the right long-term view for the city, it might mean you're only in politics for a little while. And I made a decision that that's okay with me. Here's the guy. What, year and a half in the job? He's already sending signals. I don't really want to be here. Help, Mr. Wizard. I don't want to be a mayor anymore. This is the kind, well, I'll tell you what. This may be why we're having such a tough time getting Mayor Wheeler to come on the program and answer a few questions, is that he's not crazy about the job. But it doesn't mean he's not raising money, because Willamette Week, that ran the quote, pointed out that he's one of a string of three one-term mayors. Wheeler hasn't given up yet, though, because he had a fundraiser and asked donors to give him between $500 and $2,500 to come to his home. So he's raising money for a political future, although the signals he's sending out suggest maybe he's going to be done with this job, and maybe the governor's office isn't exactly in his plans. David Cross joins us now, as he does every week, with an update on illegal aliens. David, we've had a raft of this kind of stuff. We've been talking about transplants today. The DACA issue is still hanging over Capitol Hill. What have you got for us?
Lars, we have one of the more ugly cases we've talked about over the years. This guy by the name of Sergio Martinez Flores just was convicted of the various sexual crimes against a 9-year-old girl. And wanting to know for sure if he had immigration detainer placed on him, I contacted our friends at Immigration Customs Enforcement. And Jasmine Pitts O'Keefe had this to say: Isidoro Flores Ramirez, a.k.a. Sergio Martinez Flores, a citizen of Mexico, illegally in the U.S., was previously deported in 2001. Deportation officers with U.S. Immigration Customs Enforcement placed an ICE detainer on him now that he's in the Oregon Department of Correction prison system. And, of course, you know, sex abuse of a child, unlawful penetration, attempted rape of a 9-year-old girl. Lars, that young woman who was attacked will probably never get over this. She'll probably have nightmares for the rest of her life. And, you know, she'll eventually become a young woman, a mother. And just think of it, she'll be alive when this guy gets out of prison in 27 years.
Absolutely stunning. And the fact that people don't see the cost of tolerating illegal aliens in this country. You know, I get into the arguments, David. I do this thing, left hook, right jab, with Steve Novick, the liberal. And Steve's always saying, well, you know, immigrants are more law-abiding than citizens. And I said, Steve, you're mixing up two categories of people. He said, no, I'm not. And I said, well, yeah, you are. You're mixing up legal immigrants who come here on a green card, who are very law-abiding, probably more law-abiding than American citizens, because if an American citizen commits a crime, he doesn't get kicked out of the country. There's no way to kick an American citizen out of the country. But if you're here legally and you've got a green card and you've done everything right and you commit a crime, you can have your green card taken away and you can be deported back to wherever you came from. And it doesn't matter how long you've been here. So I would agree with him. Legal immigrants are very law-abiding, but illegal aliens are extraordinarily non-law-abiding. This guy just kept coming across our border, just like a lot of the creeps out there, like the guy who killed the Indiana Colts football player the other day, ran over him drunk with a pickup truck that he was driving unlicensed and uninsured. He'd been kicked out of the country twice, deported twice, came back in again, has no respect for the law. Why would you expect him to get a driver's license or not drive drunk?
Yeah, Isidro Flores Ramos had been deported in 2001. So he's now going to go join almost, 49% of the criminal aliens, of the 973 criminal aliens I reported back in December, were there for sex offenses. And, you know, the number one sex crime, I did a DOC report for all of 2017, and the top three crimes were large, were sex abuse, rape, and sodomy. Mm-hmm. So these people are coming back into the country and committing horrific sexual crimes against the residents of the Pacific Northwest.
Well, I'll tell you what, we've got to get this stopped, and we've got to stop being a sanctuary state. States, Oregon, Washington, cities, Seattle and Portland and other Northwest cities that are sanctuary cities, and have people really understand the true human cost of tolerating this kind of criminal activity. David, thanks a lot for the update. Coming up in just a moment, you know who Rob Reiner is? And before you react, isn't he a screaming left-wing Hollywood liberal? Yes, he is. And I had a very interesting conversation with him. He's coming up in just a second, talking about the investigation of alleged collusion with Russia. And, well, let's see what he's got to say. He's coming up next, and I'm glad to get your phone calls and emails at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@LarsLarson.com. Tomorrow, our final pair of tickets for tomorrow night's premiere of the 1517 to Paris by Clint Eastwood, and you're listening to the Radio Northwest Network. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and we'll be glad to get back to your phone calls and emails a bit later at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@LarsLarson.com. It is a great pleasure to welcome back to the program a man from the other side of the political aisle from yours truly. That's Rob Reiner, who is serving on the committee, the board of the committee to investigate Russia, which describes itself as a nonpartisan and nonprofit organization. Mr. Reiner, welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me, Lars.
So on this day that we're talking, there is a new video that's being released of you sitting down with former DNI Director of National Intelligence James Clapper and the former head of the CIA, John Brennan. What did you hope to accomplish with this interview, and what did you get from them?
InvestigateRussia.org is nonpartisan. We have Republicans and Democrats on there. And everybody knows my politics. I mean, you know, I'm a liberal, and, you know, they all know how I feel about President Trump. All you got to do is check my Twitter feed. You know how I feel.
I've seen it.
What I was trying to do with this is, in the past, whenever we've been attacked, you know, by an outside force, whether it's, you know, 9/11 or Pearl Harbor, we've always come together as a country, you know, to defend ourselves and to, you know, shore up our security. But this is the first time that we've been attacked by, you know, foreign power, and that we haven't done that. We're so partisan that we, you know, that whole idea of partisanship ending at the water's edge seems to have disappeared. And so I wanted to put together a group of people from the, you know, intelligence community, from, you know, the journalistic side, and also Russian experts, to really try to put a spotlight on what happened to us and, you know, how important this is. Now, I sat down with, like you say, James Clapper and John Brennan for, you know, for a while, and I was surprised to find out how grave they think the situation is. And between the two of them, they've had like 90 years of experience in serving the government, both with Republicans and Democrats, and they said, quite frankly, they've never seen anything like what has happened to us in the 2016 election, and it continues to go on, and it'll continue to go on until we actually create a strategy as to how to combat it.
Listen, I've been following this thing for a while, and I want to know from you, is your favorite piece of evidence that says that Donald Trump conspired with Russia to affect the outcome of the 16 election? Is that the Steele dossier, or do you have something better that suggests that this actually happened?
You know something, to be completely honest with you, I don't care what happened between Trump and the Russians. I mean, that'll be decided by, you know, by Mueller and the intelligence committees in the House and Senate. I'm more concerned about the fact that we were attacked and we don't do anything about it. And it's continuing while we're sitting here talking. It's continuing, and it'll go on in 2018 and 2020. What I learned from Clapper and Brennan is these things have been going on forever. Well, the Russians, they call active measures.
Not a surprise, is it?
No, that part of it is not a surprise. What is the surprise for them was their ability to weaponize this and put it on steroids by using the internet and social media. That is something that they never expected. You know, like in 9/11, they said, well, we never expected them to drive a plane into buildings, you know. That wasn't something that was in anybody's mind. And, you know, put together a 9/11 commission. They came up with, you know, TSA and certain protocols at the airports. And quite frankly, George W. Bush was, you know, he wasn't thrilled about having a 9/11 commission at first. I mean, maybe he thought he was going to be embarrassed by not being proactive enough, whatever. But the point is, he put his own self-interest aside and said, you know, the country, we care more about this country, and securing our country than my own particular political gains. But we don't see that happening now, and maybe it's we've gotten so partisan that we've lost our ability to come together as patriots, as you know, Republicans and Democrats. And that's what I'm hoping to do here.
Well, Mr. Reiner, look, I've looked at some of the pieces that your folks released to me. It's being released tonight. You'll get a chance to see the video if you want. And all you've got to do is Google it. It's out there. Rob Reiner sitting down with John Brennan and James Clapper. But here's the thing I'm curious about is that as recently as a month ago, the president said, yeah, Mueller's fine. I think he'll do a fine investigation. I would think you'd be happy with President Trump over the fact that he seems willing to let Mueller go ahead and get his thing done, even though after a year of looking, they haven't found any tangible evidence of this supposed Russian collusion. Not to say that the Russians aren't buying some Facebook ads and things like that, but a few $100,000 of Facebook ads in a multi-billion-dollar presidential election doesn't seem like a gigantic effect. There's no evidence. They did try to get into voter rolls, and we just learned some of that this week. But where's the evidence that there was anything really there in the way of Russian collusion?
Well, we don't know. I mean, there's right now, we know this for a fact because that's been researched, is that, you know, St. Petersburg is working 24-7, literally 24-7, in different shifts, pushing out trolls, pushing out bots with, you know, false narratives and trying to sow disharmony. They don't care whether it's a Republican or Democrat. I mean, you know, it doesn't really matter to them. They don't care, you know, who's running the country. What they care about is sowing discord and tearing away at our democracy. Now, we were already divided before they started pushing all the stuff out. But it's worse now than ever, and they keep feeding that kind of tribalism, you know, where people keep getting this kind of fake news and disinformation campaigns. This is what they do. So, you know, one time it affects Trump, one time it affects the next guy. I don't really, you know, we'll see what Mueller comes up with.
Well, how long do we let Mueller's investigation go before we determine that if you've been looking for a year, you've got 20 or 25 of the top lawyers, some of them, by the way, drawn from the Hillary Clinton team, I might point out, and from the Hillary Clinton Foundation, which seems a little bit suspect. They've got dogs in the fight. How long do we let that investigation go on before we determine they didn't find anything?
How long did the Whitewater investigation go on? How long did Watergate investigation go on? Went on for years. I mean, I'm not saying I don't know how long it's going to get on, but what you and I, you know, Lars, you and I know we're on different ends of the political spectrum.
That's okay.
I get all that.
That's okay.
I get all that. But you do care, don't you, about a foreign enemy trying to tamper with
I do.
Our election?
No, I absolutely do. And in fact, I'm going to stop. We're going to take a break right here, and we'll be back in just a moment with Rob Reiner, who serves on the advisory board of the Committee to Investigate Russia. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's my great pleasure to have Rob Reiner with me. And I know people give me all kinds of heat, Mr. Reiner, because they say, gosh, you talk to these liberals. I that's okay. I said, the strength of your argument is in talking to people from the other side. I feel very strongly. In fact, I wish the Democrats would talk more with President Trump about making some deals to get the president's or the country's business done. Let's go back to what we were talking about. I do have a concern about Russia meddling with our election. And let me give you my biggest concern right now.
Right.
I brought up the Steele dossier at the beginning. The way I look at it, which is not the way the mainstream media looks at it, is a man who is a former secret agent who had a lot of sources in the Russian government goes out and talks to those sources and gets information, some of it third and fourth hand. He's on the payroll of the Hillary Clinton campaign and the DNC, who paid Fusion GPS to pay Christopher Steele to cobble up this document. There's almost no way to verify what's in the document because it comes from so deep inside the Russian government. It seems to me that the $12 million paid by the DNC and the Hillary Clinton campaign to Fusion GPS and some of it going to Christopher Steele, who drew his information from the Russians and then used that document to try to torpedo the presidency or the presidential campaign of Donald Trump, that seems like tangible evidence of real collusion, except it was collusion between the Hillary Clinton campaign with the Russians to torpedo the candidacy of her opponent who won the election. Isn't that where we should be going? Because we haven't found any evidence on one side that Donald Trump colluded with the Russians, but there's, you know, abundant evidence that Hillary Clinton and her campaign tried to use this to do to Donald Trump what they had just finished doing to Bernie Sanders, torpedoing his candidacy. Is there not any, is that relevant as well?
Well, I go back to the idea that, you know, whatever's going to come out of these investigations is going to come out of them. I mean, I'm not about, you know, listen, if it was such a successful collusion, she would have won the campaign.
No kidding.
She lost. But anyway, that means not what this is about. This is about, you know, you, Lars, and me are on completely opposite ends of the political spectrum, agreeing that we're both Americans and that we don't want foreign powers meddling in our elections.
Now, let me stop you, Mr. Reiner, for a moment there. I agree with you on that point, and yet I didn't hear this same level of concern back in during the Obama administration, when President Obama sent some of the people who'd helped him win the presidency in this country to Israel, and then used $350,000 of the taxpayers' money to try to affect the election of Benjamin Netanyahu. So if it's evil for our enemies to try to screw with our elections, isn't it almost doubly evil for us to try and screw with our friends' elections?
Well, listen, if you want to be completely honest, we've been doing things, meddling in other people's affairs, trying to manipulate political, it goes back and forth. There's no question about that. There's nobody thinking like we're the pure, perfect people in the world. But when it is done to us, you know, it's like, you know, somebody hits you. You don't just keep letting them hit you. You've got to figure out a way to defend yourself.
Agreed.
And that's all I'm saying. We got to figure out a way to defend ourselves, and we're not doing it. We're just not doing it.
You know, in that interview that you did with Clapper and Brennan, I heard some real concern from both of them saying this is wrong to undercut and disparage the efforts of agencies like the FBI. Now, I've been a big admirer of police and FBI in this country, but I also understand that they have flaws and they're made up of human beings. And lately, we've been hearing that the FBI has people working within it who are political partisans. Peter Strzok is one. Lisa Page is another one at DOJ, who are apparently saying we cannot allow this man to become president. And these are folks working within our law enforcement and DOJ who are saying we cannot allow the opponent, you know, Donald Trump, to win over Hillary Clinton. Hillary has to win. Shouldn't we disparage those agencies when they allow people within the agencies to screw with our elections? Because I agree with you, if Russia screwed with our elections, that's wrong. But isn't it really wrong for people within our own government, perhaps the deep state as it's been described, to be trying to affect the outcome of elections?
Here's the thing. If you have somebody on the investigation that, you know, is a Mueller's team and they're investigating Donald Trump,
yeah,
and they don't like Donald Trump, which he did find that out. He saw some text, and then they're off the investigation. I mean, you know, it's true. You people do make mistakes, and you know, most of these people are you know, lifelong workers for this the Justice Department and the FBI. And they're human beings, and they do make mistakes. Even James Clapper says it in the interview. You know, you make mistakes. And the agency will make mistakes. But when you see the mistake, then you correct it.
Well, but aren't we in that we have a special counsel right now? Now, he came about in a rather odd way when the former...
No. The special counsel is just looking at whether or not there are crimes committed by the Trump campaign. He's not looking into what we need to do to shore...
Oh, I see what you're saying. Well...
To me, it's about after 9/11, George W. Bush, you know, he went down to Ground Zero and he stood on the rubble and he had the bullhorn in his hand. He said, "You'll hear from all of us." And he was a little, you know, hesitant about getting into having a 9/11 commission. And, you know, he probably was worried about being embarrassed. Maybe he thought that people would think he wasn't proactive enough. I don't know. But the point is, regardless of what he felt, he went along with it. He said, you know, we got to do this. He put his own, you know, political situation aside and said, you know, the country comes first and we got to secure our country. That's what needs to happen now. We're in a new world of cyber warfare And these guys, you know, you talk to Clapper and Brennan, they'll tell you the magnitude of what can be done with cyber warfare is enormous. And we don't have anybody sitting down to try to figure out what we can do. And they suggest we have a 9/11 type commission. That's what I'm talking about. And if Trump is worried that, you know, it somehow by saying let's have the 9/11 commission, it's going to delegitimize his election, I don't care. I mean, I care about the country. I don't care about Donald Trump. I care about America, because someday it's going to be, the Republicans going to be on the other side, and we're going to be screaming about that.
That's Rob Reiner. He is sitting on the committee to investigate Russia. I don't have to agree with the guy to have a great conversation with him. This sit-down interview between Rob Reiner and James Clapper, former director of national intelligence, and the former CIA director, John Brennan, can be found at investigaterussia.org. That's investigaterussia.org. And if I had one piece of advice to the people who like to listen to this show, I know that some of you are irritated when I say this. I listen to both sides. I read both sides. I consider the ideas of both sides, and then I make up my own mind. And I think that's the healthiest way to do it. We'll be back in a moment with your phone calls and emails at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@LarsLarson.com.